Oh, like, because when I shot, I expected to make it. So, like, I don't shoot trying to miss.
You are Locked On Raptors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on? Welcome to episode number 832 of Locked On Raptors for Tuesday, November the 24th. I am your host, Sean Woodley of RaptorsHQ.com. You can find me on Twitter, as always, at WoodleySean, and you can find the show at Locked On Raptors, as well as on all of your favorite podcast providers. Please consider leaving a rating, review, or a subscription on the Locked On Raptors podcast, wherever it is you get your pods. It's very much appreciated when you go ahead and do that. All right. On today's show, it's a busy one. The Toronto Raptors have made another signing, a very good signing, I think, in Alex Len, the former King, Hawk, and Sun center, the 7-footer. We're going to talk about him off the top before we are joined by Kevin Weiss, who is one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Tampa Bay Rays podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network, to get a bit of a rundown of what Tampa Bay should hold in store for the Raptors as a host city. We talk about the basketball environment in Tampa Bay, what Tampa's going to offer as a host city, and you know, the sports year they've had, which has been kind of insane considering all the success they've had and the signings they've made and the relevance they've had. And we're also going to get into some fun stuff. I quiz Kevin on some Raptors trivia to get him ready for the new team he has in town to support and care about. And also we talk about which restaurant is most likely to get the Raptors fat while they're down there in Tampa Bay. Fun conversation overall, and it's a good one, and Kevin's great. So that's going to come up in just a bit, but let's first address the Alex Len signing a one-year deal for the remainder of the mid-level exception, so $2.3-ish million. So no second-year option or anything like that, like the Aaron Baines or Chris Boucher contracts. Just 1 year for Alex Len, a bit of a stopgap year, it would seem, for the 7-footer, who was the former fifth overall pick back in the 2013 draft. Seems like he's been around forever. He has been around forever, but he's still only 27 years old, and I think this is a really nice pickup, and I don't think it's crazy to suggest that by season's end, we will view Alex Len as being the better player than Aaron Baines. Like, Baines, I know, offers a little bit more in the way of three-point shooting. Len has dabbled a little bit. A couple years back, he shot 36% on pretty low volume, just a couple attempts a game for the Hawks, and that was nice to see, obviously, a good step up for him after not really being much of a three-point threat at all. Similar sort of trajectory to Baines, really, where it's only been the last couple years when three-point shooting has kind of been a necessity for a big man to really get a job in the NBA. I think it's been nice to see that turnaround. Whether or not Len can be a great three-point shooter, I don't know, but if he's a willing one, that helps things a lot. And I think his rim protection is really underrated as well. You know, he's been on bad teams. He's never really played for a team with a good defense. In fact, he's played for teams with actively horrid defenses a lot of the time in terms of the Suns during their dark phase. His only successful season, like team-wise, with the Suns was when he was on that 13-14 team as a rookie. He played very sparingly. He only averaged 2 points a game on that team that won, I think, 48 games and missed the playoffs. And then since then, they've been in the woods. And he has just kind of been there, soaking up minutes, soaking up time as a big man, and not really contributing to anything good in terms of defenses or team success. That's not to say that Len is a bad player or a bad anchor for a defense either. I think, you know, the numbers suggest that he's pretty good as a deterrent. I believe he is sort of near the top in terms of deterring shots at the rim, the exact number. But the number that stood out to me is this morning I was combing through the NBA rim protection numbers for last year. And in terms of guys who've defended at least 5 field goal attempts inside 6 feet per game over the course of the last season, so just 2018 or 2019-20, he ranked number 8 in terms of field goal percentage allowed at the rim, behind guys like Brook Lopez, Anthony Davis, Hassan Whiteside, I believe, was in there, Rudy Gobert. So pretty good company for Alex Len, even if he's not going to be a mobile dude who can get out and guard the perimeter and sort of use the angles and movement the way Marc Gasol did to kind of cover a ton of ground. He is going to be a pretty nice backstop, and with the perimeter defense the Raptors provide, in terms of Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby, the two guards, DeAndre Bembry, assuming he plays quite a bit, Norm Powell, Like, that feels like a pretty good situation to slot Len into. I would imagine they'll play a lot of drop coverage with him. There might be less sort of versatility to the Raptors' defensive attack this year without Gasol and Ibaka. But Len is a backstop at the rim, just as a big dude who can deter shots the way Aaron Baines is really good at as well. I think the Raptors should be a pretty good rim protection team, factoring in the perimeter defense that should sort of insulate those guys quite a bit and limit the number of times they're having to be called into action, basically, as the last line of defense. So I like the pickup for that reason. I think Len is just a pretty talented player who, again, by the end of the season might figure to be the number one center on the team. And even if he doesn't, he offers a really nice luxury to the team as well. We talked yesterday with Joe Wolfond about how the decision to bring back Chris Boucher and sort of have him be the backup five on the depth chart, you know, de facto wise, behind Aaron Baines, it was a little bit concerning because he's not really a five. He is sort of a more of a four. He's kind of a positionally ambiguous energy dude. And it was a little unclear as to how the Raptors were going to cobble together that many minutes at the five. Obviously, the Bembry signing helps in terms of freeing up OG Anunoby to slide down to the five a little bit. And I mentioned yesterday, I think they'll be at their best this season when OG plays the five. And I still think that's true. But I do think with Len, you can kind of cobble together those minutes at the five a lot more easily, and you're far more set up to deal with an injury to Baines if his injury history kind of catches up to him once again, or even, you know, a Pascal or an OG goes down. Len being there, it's just a little bit more insurance in terms of minutes that you can definitely have soaked up by dudes at the five. And if you have Len and Baines kind of flip-flop back and forth between starting, maybe Boucher gets some starts here and there depending on matchup. Maybe they start small in some matchups. I don't think they'll be married to a starting five by any means. But if you can cobble together 15 minutes of Len, 15 minutes of Baines, 10 minutes of Boucher, maybe 20 minutes of Baines, whatever it might be, you can get pretty close to that 48 minutes and then really save that small lineup, prevent the extreme wear and tear of OG playing center a bunch, and really use it when you most need it in crunch time of games. And so I think more than maybe ever, like, the starting lineup is not going to matter much this season. Len and Baines and Boucher will all get their shots, I'm sure, and that'll be fine, and it really will just sort of make things a little bit easier to go small late in games and preserve OG Anunoby, or they can stay big and finish with Baines, who I assume will be the starter from day one, and will be fluid from there. But I like the Len pickup a lot. It's a really good pivot that the Raptors have accomplished here, maintaining that 2021 flexibility while getting a couple decent stopgaps to throw in at the position at which stopgaps are the most viable, and that, you know, we've seen around the league is more of a mercenary position than anything else. So I think I am very much on board with the Len signing, and I think going forward, the way the roster is constructed now makes a lot more sense, where you can slide Boucher. You have a backup four for Pascal now, which we talked about yesterday. There wasn't really one in terms of options that you really wanted to trust just yet on the team, unless you were going to get crazy and slide Paul Watson down and play him at the four a little bit and go small. I think the balance of the roster makes a lot more sense now, and there's still a lot of opportunity for a deal midseason if that is something the Raptors want to pursue, especially considering, you know, now you have an extra big man there, and you could afford to package a couple of those bigs or a big and a wing for an upgrade somewhere if somebody does come available down the line. So all around, a nice tidy piece of business for the Raptors, and the way the depth chart is looking now, with a couple of minimum signings to likely happen in terms of Jalen Harris probably getting a two-way this year, and then they'll revisit that after this year, most likely, per our friend Dan Hackett over at Raptors HQ. There's that, and then there's all obviously the Terrence Davis guarantee situation to figure out on the 29th. Hopefully they decline it and they just go somewhere else with that roster spot, maybe bring back O'Shea Brissett or whatever it might be. But for the most part, the roster's looking pretty set in stone, and it's a team that's going to compete. And we will continue to dive in further to what the East looks like over the course of the next month. That is the most interesting topic to me in the entire league, basically, outside of the sort of mess of 3 through 8 in the Western Conference. 1 through 6 in the East is going to be an absolute bloodbath. The Raptors are very much in that mix, and I think the move of Len kind of ensures that, and they'll be there all season long, and they could finish anywhere between 1 and 6, and I would not be surprised. With that, I will leave the talk of Alex Len for now, and we're going to get into the conversation with Kevin Weiss, who again is one of the co-hosts of the excellent Locked On Rays podcast, who joined me very kindly today to talk about Tampa Bay, which we haven't talked about much as the host city for the Raptors. That came down on Friday just before free agency opened, and there has not been much time to address it. So we got into what Tampa's going to offer as a host city with Kevin Weiss. It's a really good time. It's coming up in just a second. But first, I want to tell everybody about BuiltGo.com, which is a place where you can get a wonderful product from our friends over at Built Bar. It is Go. Built Go is great. It's a wonderful way to help break through the wall that we all hit at some point during the day. This week, I'm doing morning radio again, and by the time it gets to like noon after waking up at 5 a.m., I am feeling dead. Built Go helps me get through and power through the rest of my day to get stuff done that I need to get done. It's easy to take in 1.5-ounce packages. You can put it in your briefcase, your backpack, your gym bag, your pocket, whatever it might be. It travels with you wherever you need to go. Built Go is the best workout gel on the market. It's 5-hour energy without the same crash feeling. Plus, it's the natural, so it's better for the body. It's like drinking one of those electric green monster energy drinks, but with a third of the caffeine and better results. It's got three delicious flavors for you as well: peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. And it works super well because it combines energy gel with collagen protein. Collagen protein is fast absorbing, gets into your system fast, plus it's easy on the stomach, and it promotes joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health. This stuff literally makes you look better. In addition, Built Go is loaded with the good stuff to help ignite your work: beta-alanine, B3, honey, and a kick of caffeine. Built Go then kicks to keep you going strong with B6, B12 vitamins as well, 10,000% of those daily very important vitamins for you. Right now, you can visit BuiltGo.com and use the promo code LOCKED, and you're going to get 20% off your next order. Again, that's the promo code LOCKED, L-O-C-K-E-D, for 20% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go. All right, now it's time. Myself, Kevin Weiss of Locked On Rays, talking all about the Raptors' temporary home for 2020-2021, Tampa Bay. Enjoy. All right, joining me now to get acquainted with the new home of the Toronto Raptors, Tampa Bay, Florida, is one of the co-hosts of the excellent Locked On Rays podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. It is Kevin Weiss. Kevin, how are you, man?
Doing well, outside of the breaking news that Charlie Morton has signed with the Atlanta Braves. So a little bit of a buzzkill on my birthday, actually. So, and the Bucks lost last night. So the last 24 hours haven't been kind to me. Outside of that, I'm ready and prepping for Thanksgiving. So a little bittersweet there, I guess.
Look, I'm not going to have any sympathy for Tampa Bay sports heartbreak this year, considering the championship for the Tampa Bay Lightning, the World Series run for the Tampa Bay Rays, the signing of Tom Brady, and now the acquisition of the coolest basketball team in the world, the Toronto Raptors. And I'm very thankful for you jumping on with me to help kind of get the lay of the land and let people know what Tampa is going to be like as a host city. I kind of rattled off the successes of Tampa Bay sports so far this year. Has this been the most successful year in Tampa Bay sports history? And where does the Raptors landing in Tampa for the year sort of sit in terms of the city's sports accomplishments in 2020?
Yeah, it's really interesting, Sean, because if not for the pandemic, and I guess the Raptors wouldn't be in Tampa if not for the pandemic, but this city was supposed to host WrestleMania. This city was supposed to host NCAA tournament March Madness basketball games. This city, of course, is hosting the Super Bowl this year, but it's going to have a much different feel, assuming that things aren't totally cleared with limited capacity. There's not going to be as much of the hoorah and celebration that we're accustomed to with cities hosting Super Bowls and that sort. So it's definitely been a unique and interesting a sports year for Tampa Bay, like you mentioned, just starting off with the Bucks signing Brady and signing some other big name free agents like Gronk and Antonio Brown and all those sorts of guys. And then the fact that the Lightning go up to Canada and win the Stanley Cup and the Rays getting really, really close to winning the World Series and Tampa becoming title town. And then there's a lot of other good things with some of the local colleges and sort. So this just adds to the profile of Tampa Bay and showing that, you know, maybe someday this can be a four horse town. Maybe someday this can be a city that hosts not only an MLB team, although the Rays of course play in St. Petersburg, not necessarily Tampa proper, but the area can hold an MLB team, an NHL team, an NFL team, and an NBA team. So it really is fun from that perspective. And I think, you know, this is the time of year, and a little bit probably different with the pandemic, but this is snowbird season. This is where all the people from Michigan and all the people from Canada and all the people from the North come to Tampa Bay and flock and clutter up our streets and the traffic and everything like that. So there is a built-in, I believe there's got to be a pretty large built-in following already situated in Tampa for the Raptors. I would not be surprised to see them get a home welcoming if and when fan attendance is allowed. And as far as where they're going to be playing, Amalie Arena, I mean, that's a place that is very accustomed to hosting basketball tournaments. In fact, I remember I was in college some 7-8 years ago, and the University of South Florida basketball team, that was the year they made the NCAA tournament, a rarity. I think the second or third time in their basketball program history that the men's team reached the tournament, because their home facility was being renovated. So they had to play all their home games at Amalie Arena. There then was called Tampa Bay Times Forum, but Amalie Arena. So this is the facility that the Lightning play in can very easily and methodically be transferred into a basketball site. So that's something that I think is helpful for sure for the Raptors, knowing that, and it's also hosted many basketball tournaments and things of that nature as well. I will say one thing, Sean, I know I'm kind of ranting and raving here, but
that's all good.
One thing I do notice that may have to become an adjustment is when the Raptors play in Amalie Arena, it's almost like, because it is a hockey first facility and the dimensions of the facility, it's almost like you're kind of shooting in outer space if you're shooting three pointers and such and taking shots. So that might be something that the Raptors become accustomed to. And if teams, road teams come in for a game and they're not really comfortable with that environment, maybe that's kind of an inefficiency or a home field advantage, if you will, that the Raptors can learn to cultivate and grow there. So it's definitely been a fun time to be in Tampa Bay and following sports and everything like that. And of course, I mean, the great weather, it's sunny. Yeah. I can go out in a sleeveless shirt and shorts. And I think that's something that the Raptors players in that front office and organization is really going to go to appreciate. And I'm sure, again, this is just a temporary rental, but they may not want to go home after this and seeing how good the weather is November through March or however long they're staying there.
Look, don't say that, because Raptors fans have a longstanding inferiority complex and are fearful of warm weather locales stealing their players away. So we're not going to put that seed of doubt into Raptors fans' heads right now. But for a one-year hangout, Kyle Lowry can go golf anytime he wants situation, I think it definitely makes some sense, provided everything is safe. You mentioned, first of all, I very much appreciate you getting into the minutiae of the shooting sight lines of Amalie Arena. That's a great start. And getting into home court advantages early on, that is a way, I think, to ingratiate Tampa Bay into the hearts of Raptors fans. I do want to ask you about sort of the basketball scene in Tampa Bay and sort of where the dividing lines are in terms of fandom. You mentioned there's lots of snowbirds. I would imagine the same as there are, you know, with the Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, you watch any game in Tampa or Florida or whatever it is, there's always a ton of Leaf fans at those games on the road, just because they're there and they're close by and they're hockey fans, and it just makes sense. I would imagine it's probably similar, that there are a lot of Raptors fans down there, as you mentioned. But in terms of current NBA basketball, is Tampa a sort of undeclared town? Are they Magic fans? Is it Heat fans? Is it a mix of both? Is it resentment towards Orlando and Miami as like a little brother syndrome with those other Florida cities? What's the situation in terms of basketball fandom in Tampa Bay right now?
Yeah, it's really a combination, because I don't think we can call ourselves, or the city can call itself and lay claim to, you know, we're the hometown team of the Orlando Magic, even though that city is some 60, 70 miles away. And if you go as far into the Tampa Bay area as Lakeland, where the Lakeland Magic, the G League team, plays, that's only 30 minutes, you know, 30 miles, 40 miles away from Orlando. So I think we try to be a Magic town. I mean, the games are shown here, broadcast locally on the regional sports network, but because Tampa is such a transient town with so many transplants, it's really hard to say that, because and you know, I think that we can also be a fair weather city at times. So, you know, back when LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh were playing for the Heat, then it was like, oh, we're Heat fans here. Like we're changing shirts. We're putting on red now instead of blue. Like there's a little bit of that, but I mean, you ask 10 people, you might get 10 different answers in Tampa. I know there's a lot of 76ers fans. There's a lot of New York fans. There's a lot of LA fans, just fans from everywhere, just sort of like with the baseball scene where, yeah, of course, sure. There's a lot of Rays fans, but you're also going to get a lot of Red Sox fans and a lot of Yankees fans and a lot of fans from all over. So Tampa doesn't really have that, you know, that can lay claim to that, to Orlando or the Orlando Magic, even though the proximity of the cities is so close, because there is sort of a built-in rivalry between the two cities. And the fact of you've got the University of South Florida in Tampa and UCF, University of Central Florida in Orlando, and they're bitter, hated rivals, although nobody else around the country really talks about or acknowledges it. There's the war on I-4. There's, you know, we've got Busch Gardens. They've got Disney World. We've got multiple pro sports teams. They've only got the Magic. Well, I guess they've got the soccer team too, but I guess Tampa Bay is more known as a professional sports town than Orlando. So there is some rivalry there. So this could be a really good opportunity for the Raptors to maybe become that, I don't want to say secondary home, but maybe really draw some more rooting interest locally. And I'm not sure how they're going to go about broadcasting on radio, and if they're going to try to get some television rights, maybe they can be shown on a local television station. I don't know how that's going to work or how that's going to be feathered out, but it would be really cool to kind of see. I don't know what the schedule looks like, but it could really be a fun rivalry, I guess, between the Raptors and the Magic this year, and kind of figuring out those allegiances. But yeah, it's really, I mean, it's a mixed bag as far as NBA and the fact that there isn't technically an NBA team in Tampa or Tampa Bay makes it really difficult to discern that as well, as opposed to some of the other professional sports teams. But it's definitely a good opportunity for Tampa Bay to market itself maybe in the future. Maybe, you know, I'm not really as in tune to the NBA scene if they're ever looking at expansion or anything like that, but maybe an opportunity to, hey, this is how we can handle ourselves here. We can host another team, another organization. We can be an NBA town, and maybe really kind of endearing themselves there could go a long way. But yeah, I that would be a great like poll if maybe one of the local TV stations or one of the local newspapers could go about, hey, who's your NBA team? Who do you root for? I love to see the percentage on that, because I think it'd be a really mixed bag as far as that's concerned. Me personally, Sean, I watch the Magic a lot. I go to a couple Magic games a year, even though it's a hike to drive down I-4 and to figure all that mess out with the traffic and the construction going on. But that's kind of how I've stayed into the NBA, is watching the Magic games locally and becoming a quasi fan. I'm not sitting here and saying I'm as big of a fan of the Magic as I am like the Rays and the Bucks or anything like that. But I kind of follow them. I think what kind of hurts Tampa Bay too is there's not in town, there's not like an elite level college or university. Like USF men's basketball has never been great. The University of Tampa is Division II. I know they've had success, but it's Division II basketball. You know, maybe if there was that front and center Division I team, and you could kind of see that track record of guys going from this local team to the NBA, maybe there would be more of a pipeline of NBA fans. But it's kind of tough to tell where things are at this point.
Well, it sounds like your allegiance is up for grabs, and
yes.
I look forward to Raptors fan Kevin Weiss. That's going to be a lot of fun. I also, for your sake, really do hope they show the Raptors games locally, because you'll get the wonderful broadcast team of Matt Devlin and Jack Armstrong, which is an absolute delight. And you'll also probably get to see some Canadian TV, which is always an interesting adventure as well, because our commercials are different, and we have strange products and a strange way of speaking, apparently, and that would seem to enrich your television watching experience as well. Kevin, I got a couple more for you in just a second, but first I want to remind everybody that Locked On NBA has you covered every single day on the NBA and the goings-on across the league, including Monday's episodes with Josh Lloyd featuring three local experts, an excellent, excellent way to kind of recap the weekend and get the lowdown on the biggest stories in the NBA. So go check it out on Locked On NBA. All right, Kevin, so I got a couple fun ones for you here. I'm going to quiz you a little bit in terms of your Raptors knowledge and get you seasoned up on the stuff you need to know about the Raptors before they make their way down to Tampa in a week's time, apparently. But first, I got to ask you, look, the Raptors are going to be living probably out of a hotel room, maybe some sort of large commune, maybe Derek Jeter's mansion. I'm not sure over the course of the next 6 months or so, barring a return to Canada at the midway point of the season. And, you know, I think there was a lot of talk during the NBA bubble in Orlando about sort of the local food options that some players were, in some cases, getting themselves in trouble in order to eat. Rashawn Holmes of the Sacramento Kings, for example, got himself suspended for a little bit for leaving the bubble to go get some food and had to take a longer quarantine and stuff like that. So my question to you is, Kevin, with the Raptors in Tampa for the year, say we see a Raptor or two get a little out of shape. Say we see them sort of pack on a few over the course of their time in Tampa. Which local Tampa restaurant should we most place blame against as potentially being the culprit for beefing up the Toronto Raptors over the course of this season? What is going to be the regular haunt on Uber Eats or whatever it is for the Raptors as they spend their year in Tampa?
Great question. And there's only one place. It's called Burns Steakhouse, B-E-R-N. Apostrophe S, and it is kind of like, it is the place to go. It is your birthday meal. It is your once a year meal. A little pricey, but NBA players can afford it. What separates Burns from your run of the mill steakhouse is a couple things. If you're actually going in and dining inside, it's got like a real kind of eclectic, gothic, dark look to it. But besides the steaks, which are delicious. And actually, I mean, you can kind of play it right and make it somewhat affordable, but the wine cellar, I think they claim they have the world's largest wine cellar. They've got some 6,800 different varieties. They actually even do like tours of it while you're dining in the restaurant. Like you can tour the wine cellar and they've got, I guess it's what called a sommelier who kind of explains all the different selections and things like that. It's a really big deal. They also have a one-of-a-kind dessert room, which if I recall the last time I went there, it's been a couple of years, but I want to say it's on the second floor, but it's an entire room. The entire space is dedicated to desserts. And there's like 100 desserts to choose from, all these special fancy coffees and such. And the way you order the dessert, they've actually got these like old-fashioned phones that you dial into and you call, I guess, your waiter or waitress and make your order. So it's definitely, as far as the experience, quote unquote, not only is it great food, great drinks, great desserts, but the experience is also something that's special as well. Now, in addition to Burns, I will say Tampa, also known for Cuban sandwiches. You go to any kind of local spot, you can find yourself a good Cuban sandwich. And of course, I think, Sean, the other thing that the players have to watch out for is cigars, because we are known as the Cigar City, and some craft brews and things like that. Also big craft brewery scene, but every corner there's a cigar shop or a cigar lounge. So maybe you have to be careful on that. Maybe only every once in a while, maybe after celebrating the NBA championship, can you indulge on a cigar? Because I don't know if you want to be running up and down the floor at Amalie Arena. You know, you don't want to be doing the Michael Jordan necessarily. There's not many guys that can puff a cigar before and after every game and still perform up to their peak there. So that's kind of my rundown of what Tampa has to offer. It's kind of like when NFL teams and organizations go to the combine in Indianapolis, everybody uh-huh. talks about going to St. Elmo's Steakhouse.
Right.
It's kind of like that in Tampa. So that's the place to go if you ever have a chance.
Well, that is that's good to know. It's good to direct the hate mail to Burns' Steakhouse in the event that some Raptors are lethargic and steak filled during any of their games. That's good to know. All right, Kevin, I need to quiz you now on your new NBA basketball team, your new favorite team, because let's be honest, the Orlando Magic suck and are depressing, and the Raptors are not that, and they beat the Magic all the time in the playoffs, not in the playoffs, whatever it might be, and they are quite good. So let's quiz you up on your new favorite basketball team. I got five questions for you. Let's see how you do here. And we'll begin with this one, Kevin. How many seasons in a row have the Toronto Raptors won 50 or more games?
Oh, man. I should just take my F now because I am going to... I see a lot of negative reviews coming my way. I'm going to say five.
Five is the correct answer. Good job, wow. Kevin. One for one. They won 56, 51, 59, 58, and 53 last year in the shortened season. Actually, their best win percentage in that time was last season. So you got that one. You're one for one. Good start. Question number two. Who was the first ever draft pick in the history of the Raptors back in 1995?
Oh, my gosh. Man, I do not. By the way, I'm not trying to cheat and trying to search as I'm stalling here. Okay, this guess is totally incorrect, but I'm just going to say Vince Carter.
Vince Carter is incorrect. He was a few years into the franchise. It was Damon Stoudemire who was the first overall pick. Mighty Mouse won Rookie of the Year in the 95-96 season and then was gone in 2.5 years because the Raptors back then were horribly run. All right, we go on to question number three. Who is the all-time leading point scorer in Toronto Raptors history?
I'll go back to the well one more time and go with Vince Carter.
Also incorrect. Wasn't around quite long enough. DeMar DeRozan is the all-time points leader for the Raptors after his 9 seasons with the team. So you're 1 for 3. You still have a chance to go over 500 here. And let's continue on. How many times have the Toronto Raptors made it to the conference finals?
Conference finals in their entire history, I will say
25 years.
I will say 3 times.
3 times is incorrect, unfortunately. They made the conference finals for the first time back in 2015-16 when they lost to the Cavs in 6, and then they obviously made it to the conference finals last year when they won the title, or I guess 2018-19 when they won the title and beat the Milwaukee Bucks. All right, so you're 1 of 4. That's okay. You're learning. It's fine. You'll make your way, and this is all now ammunition for you the next time you talk to a Tampa Bayite. What's the demonym for people
yeah,
in Tampa?
Well, I guess it's technically a tampon.
A tampon. Okay. Yeah. That sounds terrible.
Yes, it is. T-A-M-P-A-N. Tampon. That's all we got. That's all we got. It's not great. I'm telling you. There's gotta be a better one out there.
We'll workshop it this year for sure. All right, my last one for you, Kevin. What is the name of the Toronto Raptors mascot?
Oh my gosh. Well, I assume it's not Raptor because that would be too simple. Okay, this is really bad and totally just a swing and miss on my part, but I'll say Rappy the Raptor.
Oh no, it is just the Raptor. Had you dropped the Rappy part, you would have had it exactly. Yeah, they went simple, they went classic. I'm really excited for Tampa Bayites. I'm coming up with something new.
Yeah, anything else? We'll take suggestions. This is an open dialogue here because I think somebody just on a whim decided to throw that out one, and we've been trying to kind of shade ourselves from that ever since.
Mm-hmm. But either way, I'm very excited for people in Tampa Bay to get acquainted with the Raptor, the best mascot in sports. Very, very, very good mascot, and he should be a great addition. He's been the same guy since day one of the franchise as well, which is not easy to do. Kevin, thank you for submitting yourself to embarrassment in this final part of the podcast. I very much appreciate you being a good sport, but now you know all these fun facts to use in conversation going forward. With that, I think that's going to bring us to the end. Do you have anything you would like to promote, Kevin?
Well, Sean, thank you again. I would like to say that, yes, I've got a lot to learn, and if I if there's not a way to get Raptors games on local television or radio, maybe that means I just have to start going to games, or there's also something I could use some creativity and
I'll send you a wink, wink, nudge, nudge stream.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. The other thing too, is Drake going to come to Tampa and attend the home games? Like what's the latest on Drake? I mean, there's plenty of mansions on Davis Islands and the harbor and everything like that. Like he can find a spot if he wants to, you know. Maybe I think Tom Brady, Derek Jeter might have a room for him to stay if need be. So I would really like to see some Drake in Tampa, but that's just me speaking.
He is a polarizing figure up here. I think he's done unquestionably good work as like the quote unquote global ambassador for the team. Sometimes he's embarrassing, but also sometimes in an enormous playoff game, for example, he will clap in the ear of one Rodney Stuckey and force him to turn it over. And the Raptors end up winning a very pivotal game 5 against Indy. That's just some of the things Drake does. And you, I'm sure, will get acquainted with those things. By the way, go watch game 5 of the first round against the Pacers back in 2015-16 to get a real look at what playoff Raptors basketball is like. By the seat of your pants, just nervous all the time, and often featuring Norman Powell doing insane things. So that's what I have for you. Kevin, thank you so much. Go listen to Locked On Rays right now. If you are a baseball fan, you and Ulysses do a fantastic job with that show, and I highly recommend if people are going to adopt the Tampa Bay Rays, if by any chance, as their baseball team this year. I know you're all Blue Jays fans, of course, and the Rays are to be despised more often than not, but Kevin and Ulysses are acceptable Rays fans who do a wonderful job covering that team. So I highly recommend you go and check it out. That'll do it for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please subscribe to, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Coming up on tomorrow's show, and likely as a two-parter tomorrow and Thursday, is going to be the Serge Ibaka Moments with the Toronto Raptors Fantasy Draft with myself, Katie Heindel, and Vivek Jacob. It's going to be a lot of fun, so stick around for that Wednesday and probably Thursday. And we will talk to you again on Wednesday with another episode of Locked On Raptors.